Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
Two eagles who had been hurt and are now recovered were released at Lake Red Rock last week. Let's go in depth with Marion County naturalist Marla Mertz, Kay Newman with Saving Our Avian Resources, and Sarah Schmucker with the Fish and Wildlife Service, the Quad Cities. So Marla, there was a successful release of two eagles today at the north side of Lake Red Rock. What's going on?
Well, we had a fortunate opportunity to be able to be on site in early June when one of the local eagle nests here in Marion County, the nest collapsed. There were three young. The youngest was rescued and was able to take on to Kay Newman at SOAR, Saving Our Avian Resources. And we had the opportunity to bring her back to the Lake Red Rock area where she's originally from. So she's been in rehabilitation for about 4 months, and I know she went in with some bruising, but Kay has all the intimate details of what was wrong with her. But she did crash with the nest. It was about an 80-foot drop in a large cottonwood tree.
And the other two didn't make it?
The other two were absolutely fine.
Oh, okay.
One was already a flighted bird, and the other one learned within 3 days. So both of those were able to stay put and be under their parents' care. And this one was just a little too young. Her tail feathers were a little too short. She just wasn't near ready to fledge the nest yet and was pretty bruised up, so.
Kay, tell me about SOAR, Save Our Avian Resources.
So SOAR is a nonprofit that does wildlife rehabilitation and education and research. So the rehabilitation part is taking in injured wild birds and trying to fix whatever's wrong with them and releasing them back out into the wild for a second chance. We have some birds that we cannot release that we use for programs. And we also do some cooperative research projects. We've been doing a lot of research on bald eagles and lead poisoning, but have had the opportunity here recently to work with the Fish and Wildlife Service on their bald eagle telemetry project.
I've been interviewing you for years. I mean, I think our first interview, Marla introduced us like 10 years ago or something.
Maybe, probably.
All right, so here's where I'm just going to repeat. SOAR is a nonprofit.
Yes.
And so
we rely on donations entirely for what we do. Yes. And so SOAR has a wonderful webpage, soarraptors.org, where you can go and look up patients and see what projects we're working on, what upcoming events that we have, things that are going on with SOAR.
And the second eagle, where was that one from that was released today?
That one is very, very interesting. So that bird originally was electrocuted in Oklahoma and rehabilitated there at the Gray Snow Eagle House, I believe. The Iowa tribe in Oklahoma does rehabilitation down there. I talked to their veterinarian, and that bird was flying around the flight pen, looked great. The Fish and Wildlife Service there, or USGS, put a backpack transmitter on her. She's part of the Oklahoma Bald Eagle Study. She was out and loose and free and doing whatever she wanted to for about a month, and she flew to northern Iowa.
From Oklahoma,
yeah. And she was found at Lost Island Lake, so Palo Alto County. Some fishermen, she came in and tried to steal a fish they were reeling in.
Oh, really?
Their boat, and got wound up in the fishing line. The anglers got her in the boat, got her ashore, got her all entangled, and she just sat. She didn't want to fly. They called the Palo Alto County Conservation Board people. They came, got her, kept her overnight, just didn't think she looked good. The warden transported to us. And I pulled her out of the crate, and I said, oh, she's got a transmitter and a band. And so we immediately went searching for her band number, and the transmitter also had a number, and found out her Oklahoma history. And so she weighed 7.5 pounds when she came to us. So she's very, very thin, and possibly West Nile. We were getting a lot of birds in around that time frame suffering from mild cases of West Nile virus. And so that could have just, you know, you kind of feel like you have the flu. And if you're an eagle and you feel like you have the flu and you can't hunt for 3 or 4 days, you're going to be weaker, and it's just kind of a, you know, rolling downhill sort of thing. And so that's the best guess we have of what got her into that low weight condition. The transmitter that she had on looked perfect. It wasn't, you know, impeding her in any way at all. And so we've had her now at SOAR for probably about 2 months, getting her fattened up. She may have had a parasite load also, and so she's been wormed, and has been in our flight pen and absolutely flying back and forth, has molted in some new feathers, and met up with Fish and Wildlife Service Sarah over here and got the transmitter put back on her, so they'll be able to continue to monitor her.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation about eagles with Marion County naturalist Marla Mertz, Kay Newman with Saving Our Avian Resources, and Sarah Schmucker with the Fish and Wildlife Service. Well, Sarah, tell us about your research.
So the research project that this individual bird is part of originated from an Oklahoma study, as Kay mentioned, and there's a lot of the same players between the Oklahoma study and the Midwest Telemetry Project that we have going on here. So we were able to collaborate and get together with them to be able to replace this unit onto the bird prior to its release. I'm not entirely familiar with all the specifics of the Oklahoma study, but this bird will also be contributing to some of the information for our Midwest study here. And the primary locations that we've been acquiring our birds for this study are Iowa and Illinois, primarily along the Mississippi River, but we have branched out a little bit too. The project started in the winter of 2013-2014. And it's a partnership between West Virginia University, now Conservation Research Global, is another nonprofit who is heading up the research, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the Illinois-Iowa Field Office, and USGS. We've been working together and have successfully released around between 40 and 50 birds with transmitters since 2014. And so the birds that we release provide a whole lot of information to a lot of different research studies. We're looking at both their full migrational movements in addition to their local wintering movements. We're looking at how their flight may be influenced by infrastructure on the landscape, such as wind turbines. Every bird that we take a whole slew of morphometric measurements. We take blood samples and we band them. The blood samples are part of a population segment study that's going on, a PhD project, in addition to another PhD project looking at heavy metals in the bird's blood. And there's several other studies that are originating from this research.
Well, and did I hear you say that you were getting the DNA too? Is that for looking at breeding patterns or kinship or what?
The possibilities are endless on what we could use the information for. Right now it's primarily to confirm sex of the birds, but it could be used for many studies down the road.
Now, that Oklahoma bird making it to northern Iowa, is that common or rare?
I would say pretty common. We see birds make significant movements. We have one individual, we've nicknamed him Ferris because we actually caught him next to the Ferris wheel in Davenport, Iowa. But he travels all the way up to the Arctic Circle every year and comes right back to the Ferris wheel. We'll see him while we're out trapping in the winter. Just these huge, impressive movements. So a little flight from Oklahoma to Iowa is nothing for a bald eagle.
The Arctic Circle?
The Arctic Circle.
I mean, but why? I mean, do we know why they do this? Is there just out there having fun or some kind of genetic imprint on them to tell them to fly long distances or what?
In ecology, we see the migrational movements, primarily them following their food sources and following temperatures, what's available and what's hospitable for them to live at that time of year.
But it sounds like there's considerable variation if everybody's not following him.
Mm-hmm. There are, each bird kind of takes on their own personality. Once the breeding birds pair up, they tend to make much smaller migrational movements than the non-paired far-moving birds. Younger birds tend to be slightly more nomadic until they kind of figure out their pathway or pair bond. And so you see a lot of different variations and movements of bald eagles.
More in depth after this.
I continued my conversation about eagles with Marion County naturalist Marla Mertz, Kay Newman with Saving Our Avian Resources, and Sarah Schmucker with the Fish and Wildlife Service. I saw you, it looked like, I didn't want to bother you and the bird, but I saw it looked like you were sewing that transmitter on the eagle, mm-hmm. And was that what you were doing, and how big is it?
Yes, so the unit weighs about between 60 and 70 grams. It's the equivalent of us wearing clothes on our bodies. It's hardly anything for the eagle. The harnesses, we actually hand make each harness for the birds. It's made out of a Teflon ribbon that's non-abrasive to the bird's skin, and we only sew through one side that is pointed outwards. And so none of the stitching, nothing will ever touch the bird's skin. And the material will actually absorb the bird's oils from their skin. It kind of almost acts as a second layer of skin that moves over the body, so it gets very embedded into the under the feathers and stays put once it's put on.
But it's not uncomfortable.
So, and the truth, it's not sewn to the bird. She was just sewing the knot just in case. But
yes,
when we got that bird from Oklahoma, who'd been out and flying with that transmitter for a month, we could just run our fingers underneath that ribbon, and it was all soft, and it was like it kind of, like you said, sort of taken on some of the little feathers from the underneath feathers, and she didn't even know she had it on.
Hmm. So do you go home to your computer or work in your computer, and do you see where all the birds are?
Yeah, so these transmitters are GSM GPS transmitters, and so they communicate with cellular towers. And so once the units are on the birds and they're released, there's no tracking effort that goes into these at all. We just log into our computers and it'll pop up where the birds are. They're all set to different duty cycles, we call them, of when they check in and download data. And we can control all of that remotely, so we can change how often that they're communicating with the cell towers. And when they make the far-moving flights, such as up into Canada or up to the Arctic Circle, there's obviously not a lot of cell tower coverage up in those forests of Canada, and so the units are actually capable of storing all of those data points that they collect while they're gone, and then as soon as they ping a cellular tower, they'll dump all of their data. So sometimes one might go missing over the summer while it's summering up in Canada, but then as soon as it winters back down into cell range, it'll provide all of the data that's collected over the summer.
It must have good batteries.
They are solar-powered
units. Wow.
Yep, they have solar panels, so they recharge themselves.
Wow.
So we might even be able to get a location on Oklahoma yet this evening and mm-hmm. see if she's just hanging right over here or if she's across the reservoir or where she is.
And so when you get around other people with these interests, do you just talk eagles all the time?
It's a hot topic. Everybody loves the eagle.
Yeah, well, and the public loves eagles, too. What value does this kind of research have for the general public? I know that I've got somebody out there thinking, we shouldn't be spending money on this, the federal government being involved. What's the pure research value that's a payoff for the public?
So as the population of the bald eagle has been growing, it was near extirpated, and in the 1970s has really started to make a comeback, and their population is on an exponential increase, as we can tell right now. But with the increase in the bald eagle population, the human population is also increasing, and the need for energy infrastructure and other structures to support that. And so we're seeing an increasing conflict of bald eagles with energy infrastructure, other structures that are being put up, lead poisoning issues, other heavy metal contamination issues. And so this research is really helping us get a grip and a handle on what the potential impacts might be of these new threats and how we could help prevent them. And so in terms of the energy industry, this can help us define if there's heavily used movement corridors where the birds are traveling, that we could, you know, set back different structures to prevent the likelihood of the birds colliding with such structure. It can help us in a lot of different ways to help better protect the bald eagle.
Are they hitting wind turbines? I presume they are.
We have some data on that. I don't know if you have too much yet, but just rehabilitation data, you know, that is a measurement of sickness and death for wild animals on the landscape. And so we're the Iowa data for bald eagles, so SOAR, Black Hawk County Rehabilitators, the Wildlife Care Clinic in Ames, then the RARE group in Iowa City have all collaborated to gather data on bald eagles also. And they are an indicator species of environmental health. And so all these measurements that the Fish and Wildlife Service is taking on them will help us live together with them on the landscape much, much better, and hopefully produce energy that doesn't use fossil fuels, which will be much better for us in the long run. But we're finding in our data set of 450 bald eagles, we have 2 wind turbine collisions, and we have about 176 lead poison cases in that data set. And so
Big problem is lead poisoning.
The big problem in our gathering of data is the lead poisoning issue. And I know that hunting season is coming right up. And oddly enough, there's a very simple solution to that problem for bald eagles, in that if everyone hunts with copper slugs, copper rifle bullets, non-toxic shot, everyone can enjoy hunting, and carcasses will be available that don't contain poison for bald eagles, and the game meat that you take home will not have lead in it either. So it's a win-win-win.
So what's it feel like when you see those eagles take off into the sky after leaving SOAR and your rehabilitation efforts?
This is the fun part of doing wildlife rehabilitation, and is to be able to get something back out there and give them a second chance. And the Oklahoma bird is especially exciting, is that we'll be able to do a little follow-up. Usually we don't know. That's the most interesting question we get at releases, because we did some this weekend at Waterworks Park, and well, what are they going to do when after we let them go? And when they don't have a transmitter on, we don't know. They get to go out and do whatever they want, and we rarely get to know what happens to them in the future. And so this one will get a chance to just kind of see where she goes and what she does and how she fares.
We're gonna go together.
Might as well go together.
Thanks to Marla Mertz, Kay Newman, and Sarah Schmucker for contributing to the program.
For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.